This is Robert Vendetti, writer for DC Comics, and you're listening to the Spectacular Comic Book Podcast.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 006 of the Spectacular Comic Book Podcast. I am your host, Andrew Reiner, again joined by self-described lesser being, Pal Federline. Hello!
Hey, how's it going? Don't agree with that, but sure, okay.
You know, I'm just adhering to what you put out in the universe, and that's what I heard, and I'm rolling with it. We got a busy week this week. I read like 8 different comics. We'll dive into 3 to 4 of them extensively, and we'll give quick kind of synopses and reviews of the other ones. Mm-hmm. One book that came out this week, Thor number 3. We should begin by just worshiping the altar of Thor and Donny Cates and Nick Klein. They are absolutely crushing it. I can't gush about this book anymore. You just finished it, Kyle. Mm-hmm. What's your takeaway real quick?
So Thor, I guess, has always been a really powerful character, but in the movies, I never truly got that vibe. Yeah, he's powerful. He's the God of Thunder, all that stuff. But I feel like the way that Donny Cates is bringing Thor out in this series of comics is just, he is a beast. And it's coming across to me that way through these, a way that I've never really seen Thor before. It just through the artwork, through the writing, he is just so powerful, and I love every bit of it. Every moment that I read in this series of Thor is just more and more, I don't know, just pumping with testosterone, man, every time
I
read this.
Yeah, I agree, and I love how they're just kind of treating him and Beta Ray are just treating Galactus as just this gnat, right? Like, mm-hmm. They're just like, go away, dude. Like, mm-hmm. We're in the middle of something. And Thor has been, like you said, not only powerful, but very aggressive in tone and just like intimidating and really just like, don't mess with me right now. I'm on a mission.
Yeah.
I got this figured out. I know there's terrible things happening in the cosmos, but trust me on this one. You guys got to stop interfering with me. I'm the king. Yeah. I'm the Herald of Galactus. Like, let me just do my thing. Anyway, if you're not reading Thor, read Thor. It's the best. 3 issues out now. We're going to do something more galactic. Let's move on to our next book.
Nebula.
Marvel's official description on this one is, Nebula has grown under the shadows of Thanos and Gamora, but no longer. With her eyes set on the top secret device, Nebula has big plans for her future, and she's not about to let anyone get in her way. But her goal may end up costing her more than she's willing to pay after a showdown with one of the cosmos's most feared bounty hunters. Don't miss out on the cosmically critical series launch from Rising Stars, Vita Ayala. She wrote Prisoner X and Claire Rowe from Fearless. Kyle, what'd you think of this one?
I enjoyed Nebula. My first encounter with this character was in Guardians of the Galaxy and the Avengers. She was played by Karen Gillan. Mm-hmm. But the comic did really well in making her sinister. She was on a mission to get, you know, this all-seeing integrated into her system, and no one was going to get in her way. So particularly, hopefully this isn't a spoiler, I'll edit it out, but the fact that she uses a child as a ploy to get what she wants was just, it was dark, very dark.
Yeah, I wouldn't call that a spoiler. I agree with that. I think what she ends up doing to her body too, you know, she's like mm-hmm. mostly mechanical, and she's questing for power and finding ways to kind of gain a foothold over people around her, and what she does here is crazy. Mm-hmm. I should point out, this is just a 5-issue series, so it's finite. It's a good jumping on point, I found. And I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. I was entertained all the way through it. It's quick and snappy. It's a decent read. Nice artwork. Kyle, what'd you think?
I want to point out on the artwork, I kind of got Jessica Jones vibes from this whenever you kind of go inside Nebula's head and she's analyzing other characters.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that was really neat, and I am right there with you. I'm going to give this an 8 out of 10 as well.
Cool. Let's move on to the next book.
Green Lantern, Season 2.
Kyle, did you read this one? I think I told you, stay away.
Yeah, I did not read this.
As the name implies, this is a follow-up to Grant Morrison and Liam Sharp's original or new run on Green Lantern that was dubbed Season 1. So basically, he took down the Commander, he took down the Black Star Incursion, and now Hal Jordan is out there in the universe trying to rebuild order by creating new cosmic immortals, and kind of they call them the Young Guardians in this book. It's a quest for that. The art is spectacular, by the way. There's so much to see. It's almost like Where's Waldo in certain scenes. It's really neat. The narrative, I would not call a good jumping on point, though. There is so much history and characters involved in the Green Lantern Corps. Yes, Hal Jordan is easy to latch on to, and he's there front and center. And this is kind of a rebuilding book, kind of restoring the order. But I was just kind of like, this is crazy on a cosmic level that I think most people will be like, who's that? What's all this stuff about? They don't really get into the weeds on that. So if you know Green Lantern, yeah, you can get into this. If you don't, and you're just kind of looking to read about this Emerald Warrior, I would say this is not a good jumping on point. We'll wait until there's other Green Lantern books out there. We'll explore those in a future episode when there's a good jumping on point. But for now, treat this as like a second season of a TV show, right? You don't want to start there. You'll probably want to go back to season one if you are there. I gave this one as a starting out point. I know Green Lantern. I read that first season. I gave it a 7 out of 10.
Okay.
Gwen Stacy.
Gwen and Peter may not have met until Amazing Spider-Man number 31, but that doesn't mean Gwen's life began on that page. Learn the never-before-told origin of Gwen Stacy, top of her class, daughter of the police captain, and, as her friend Harry Osborn calls her, the beauty queen of Standard High. But she's way more than you even know. Gwen's got a science brain, a nose for trouble, and a no-quit attitude that always gets her in trouble. In the early Marvel Universe, that's a recipe for disaster. Don't miss Gwen, Captain Stacy, Harry, and Norman Osborn, Crime Master, Wilson Fisk, Jean DeWolf, Yuri Watanabe, and even Spider-Man.
Okay, I'm just going to point out, not all those characters are in this first issue. This is a finite series as well. This is one of five. It's a fun little read. You really get to know Gwen well and how she interacts with other people. There's not much of kind of a antagonist in this until the very end, I would say. It's more about things that's going on in her life and conflicts in her life. I'm going to give it a 7.5. I don't necessarily think it's a necessary piece of Spider-Man fiction, but it's neat. Again, the art's cool. And Kyle, what'd you think?
I agree with you. It was a fun read. I enjoyed seeing the relationship between her and her father. And while she doesn't have any superpowers, I mean, you can tell she's really smart in this series. So I'm curious to see, well, I guess the description itself kind of spoiled it, if they bring Spider-Man in. And I also, can I just say for the record, I guess maybe it was it necessary for them to give us another scenario of Ben Parker dying?
Yeah. It's just constant.
Is that just every Spider-Man thing that has to be mentioned?
It's like the Batman movies, right? Like, you know, the new Batman movie, you're going to get another shot of Crime Alley and all that again, right? True. Like, it's just true. Like, I agree with you. Like, just stop already. We get it. We got it. Like, do it in like a title sequence or just in a trailer. Don't actually have it be in the movie. Like, it's right. Just like, we know. I don't want to see this anymore.
We know what happens. So I'm on fence about keeping up with the series as well. It's really cool. I just don't know if it, you know, interests me personally. So I gave it a 7.25.
All right. Next book.
Flash 88.
All right, so this is interesting because this is a prelude to what is going to be Flash's 750th issue. I know this says it's Flash 88, but this is kind of the calm before the storm. This is a good jumping on point. You have a new threat coming in here. DC's official description is, witness the birth of Paradox. As a hero, the Flash helps as many people as he possibly can. But Paradox shows what happens when ordinary people pay the price for superpowered battle royales. What started as a happy life of family and science turned into a nightmare when the Turtles' attack on Central City rained down from the future. And now the story of the civilians caught in the crossfire will change the Flash's life forever. Paradox is, so this is like his origin story. You get like really in-depth in how this new character comes to be. So for that, as a collector, you might want to grab this issue. Otherwise, you can probably wait for whatever's coming next to be in that 750. I believe it's only 2 weeks away. I like this issue a lot, actually. I'm going to give it an 8.75 out of 10. I've always liked Flash. Like this description, I just read details. There's one point here where you see the Flash kind of messing with the time stream, and that actually affects people and has a counter effect on their lives and really, really messes them up. And this guy is one of those caught in the crossfire, and he deserves to throw down with the Flash. Like, he has a serious beef. I'm guessing he's going to go about it the wrong way, like most villains do in comic books. But this is a cool origin story. You don't often get, like, everything about a villain right out of the gates. So this is kind of neat, just seeing that build up. And like I said, it's a good jumping on point, but we'll probably have another good Flash jumping on point in 2 weeks. Next book.
Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey.
I should point out, Kyle did not read Flash. I don't think you read Harley Quinn as well, right?
Nope.
All right, so we'll just get into these really quick. This is a sequel to Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti's Black Series book over at DC. The Black Series, really high quality paper, larger size format. It's a wider book, so it really feels like quality in your hands. This book is crazy. Kyle, do you want to give a description?
The official description: the creative team that transformed Harley Quinn forever returns to shake up her world once more. And this time, the gloves are off. Harley Quinn has avoided Gotham City ever since she broke up with the Joker and found a home and kind of a family in Coney Island. But when she gets an offer she can't refuse, she has no choice but to slip back into the city as quietly as she can, hoping to be gone before anyone, especially her ex, learns she's been there. But for Harley, as quietly as she can is plenty loud. And before she can say, "Holy bounty hunters, Batman," the Joker sees every supervillain in the city on her pretty ombre head. And the only team, though enough, or crazy enough, to come to her defense is the Birds of Prey. The foul-mouthed, no-holds-barrel sequel of the DC's raciest runs is here. Get on board early before we come to our senses.
Yeah, that last line is, or one of those last lines about it being racy, is spot on. It is a lot of characters running around in their underwear and being crazy, and it's really over-the-top, 100% energy the entire time through this book. For that, it's pretty fun. It's goofy. I wasn't impressed by where this story went. I really didn't think there was much going on there. There's a couple nuggets toward the end where you're like, okay, maybe there's something building here, but it is just more about letting these loud personalities shine. For that, it's kind of neat, but I'm going to say this is a book you can pass on. I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10. Next book.
Batman. Pennyworth. R.I.P.
All right, DC's official description. Mm-hmm. Alfred Pennyworth served the Wayne family for decades, even through the tragic loss of Bruce Wayne's parents. His death at the hands of Bane is the only event that could possibly compare to the fateful night in Crime Alley, and it leaves Bruce at a similar crossroads. If Alfred was the glue that held the Bat family together, how will Batman deal with all that falling apart? And if the Caped Crusader is to truly be alone, he might either hang that cape up once and for all or double down and carry on this vengeful quest forever. Batman Pennyworth Rip celebrates the life of one of the most important people in the history of Gotham City, while also addressing questions about what's next. All right, whoever wrote this blurb, a little over the top on Alfred's importance. One of the most important people in Gotham City? Come on. Come on.
I mean, he
worked for Wayne. Yeah, he helped him, but he was like a butler guy. Yeah, I know he did a lot of community stuff too, but come on, come on. That's too much. But that said, this is a very heartfelt story. I like the way that it brings all the Batman characters together to share their thoughts on Alfred and tell some of their stories, which you see kind of done by different writers and artists. So it's kind of a collection story, so to speak. But you do get a sense that there is legitimate closure here. Yes, there's always a chance in comic books that Alfred will come back someday and he'll be, I don't know, resurrected through the time stream, or, you know, he'll reappear from Earth 3 and be slightly different. For now, for this time being, we got some closure, and that's kind of cool. I'm going to give this one 8.25. Kyle, where do you sit?
I liked this book. I thought it was interesting, and I love seeing the coming together of the Batman family, all those characters. All in one bar setting, just sitting there reminiscing about their memories of Alfred, I thought was a emotional and a good, fun read. I think you hit the nail on the head by saying there we got certain feels out of this book that I don't think other books can deliver.
Yeah.
Is this lined up to be a series?
No, it's a one shot.
Okay, because I was confused as to how they were going to continue it, especially after that last page. Batman is kind of stone cold, doesn't show emotion really through this book. Bruce Wayne, sorry. But at the end, we see him kind of crack, so.
Yeah, and that will unfold through the Batman books. So this is kind of an offshoot to those.
Mm-hmm.
And as the official description pointed out, it said, like, he's either going to hang up the cape or double down. And it's like, we know what he's going to do. He's, he's not going to stop being Batman. You guys are trying to make money off these books. He's going to be back. So it'll be interesting to see what comes next. Yes, these one-shots can be kind of confusing sometimes because they put a one on it implying series, but they also just want to let you know, like, hey, this is an issue. First issue, come get it.
Yeah, that's right where I was with it. When I saw the one on the page, I thought, well, I wonder what they're going to do for number two. But it's definitely a good read, something to pick up. A little different from, I guess, your other comic series. So I gave this an 8 out of 10.
Next book.
Superman Heroes, number one.
All right, this one was delayed a few weeks and is out now. This all ties in with Clark Kent revealing his identity to the world and how it affects the people around him. So this kind of has a similar vibe to that Alfred comic that we just read, where it is a kind of a collection of stories and different artists and writers. You got Bendis, you know, Brian Michael Bendis, Matt Fraction, Greg Rucka. There's a ton of people involved in this one, and it is kind of filling in those gaps of characters that might not get the time to shine in their, you know, Superman's main books, just letting you know how they feel about things that are going on and kind of how Superman and Clark are dealing with that. Cal, I don't think you read this one either.
Mm-mm.
I don't think this is something that people need to pick up. It is just kind of middle ground, plot building off to the side a little bit. You know, these are just kind of side stories. Again, just giving you little nuggets of how people are feeling. If you're way into Superman, yeah, you might want to get this, but otherwise, this is not a good jumping on point for a Superman book. So I'm going to give this one a 7 as well. A lot of 7s this week. And that is our last review. Let's see what's coming next week.
Upcoming comics.
All right. So in the past, we kind of went company by company. I'm going to first list the books that I think we should get, Kyle.
Nice.
Like, these are the ones that are, like, I think, right at the forefront. We need to check these out. Aquaman number 57. I don't know where we're at in the story arc on this one, but Mera and Aquaman are having a baby in this issue. So we should check that out. That sounds like a big milestone in Aquaman's life. We're also going to check out Deceased, the Unkillables. This has been a long-running series now. I think this might be part 3 of the Deceased thing going on. But this is all about villains and bad things happening, end of days kind of stuff. That's a first issue. We're going to look at that. This one's really interesting, Kyle. Plunge number 1 is another DC Black series. So that's like the prestige format, the thicker book.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you read what this is and see what you think of it?
In the aftermath of a devastating tsunami, an exploration vessel known as Derleth begins sending an automated distress signal from a remote atoll in the Bering Strait. The only problem is the Derleth has been missing for 40 years. Marine biologist Mariah Lamb joins the Carpenter salvage team to recover the Derleth's dead, only to find that in this remote part of the Arctic Circle, the dead have plenty to say to the living. Joe Hill and Stuart Immonen's plunge into terror begins here.
So this sounds like kind of a weird, supernatural mystery, kind of out in the middle of nowhere.
Kind of like an X-Files.
Yeah, I'm all about this. Like, I like it when DC Black Series kind of avoids the main big characters, you know, their superheroes, and does something a little different. And that's one of these books. So that sounds cool.
Mm-hmm. That definitely sounds interesting.
This is something different as well. Marvel Voices number 1. So there was a podcast going on for a while that talked about different perspectives and creators in comic books. And this is kind of collecting a lot of those things into one issue. So from things you were listening to page, that's a neat thing. The big book of the week is going to be Wolverine number 1. And yes, he's had a lot of number 1s, but this will be tying into what's going on in X-Men right now with Krakoa and all that stuff. So this should be a pretty interesting issue to see where they're going to take this, especially because they are plugging the return of Omega Red, one of his threats. So that'll be interesting. Outside of that, in terms of new books that are coming out, we'll kind of go publishers now. So those are the ones we're going to pick up. There might be some other things I'll grab. Won't know what those are until I'm at the comic racks and seeing what's going on. And Archie's going to meet the B-52s.
Ooh.
Don't know if we want to read about that. Probably not. Boom Studios has Firefly 14, Lumberjanes, number 71. Something is Killing the Children, 1 through 4. So that might be interesting. We'll see. Dark Horse has Bang, number 1. And a lot of magnets. They're releasing a lot of magnets for Cyberpunk 2077 and Umbrella Academy. So if you like collectibles, those are out. Again, Aquaman 57, Batman 89, that's in the middle of a run. We have Legion of Superheroes number 4, Nightwing 69. Remember, we were talking about that a few episodes ago, that it might be jumping on point. I'll flip through that one. We'll see. And Wonder Woman Dead Earth 2, that's another Black Series book that's out as well. DC's really going into the Black Series stuff, and I applaud them for that. As much as I love main continuity and canonical stuff, these side stories have been great. Dynamite has Red Sonja, Age of Chaos, number 1 and 2. Vampirella, number 8. And IDW, two Transformers books, Galaxies, number 4 and Galaxies 17. Along with DuckTales, Fairies, and Scares. I don't know what that is, but it sounds interesting. That's issue number 3 of 3, so that's not a good jumping on point. And Marvel, they're really going kind of crazy with that Iron Man story we don't like, Kyle. Machine Man number 1 is out. And Captain America number 19, Captain Marvel 15, Daredevil 18, Deadpool number 3. So if you've been reading that, that's one of the books we started reviewing. That is out. Fantastic Four 19, Guardians of the Galaxy number 2. We started with that one. That's about it for new books coming out here. You know what, Kyle? We're going to end this episode with something very cool. We have another interview.
Yes, with Robert Venditti, writer for Justice League 40, which we reviewed last week.
Let's get to it.
Interview with Robert Venditti.
And we're now joined by DC Comics' Robert Venditti, one of the writers now on Justice League. Hello, Robert.
Hello, guys. How you doing? Thanks for having me on.
We're doing great, and congrats on the release of your book last week. We reviewed it and said it's a great jumping on point for new readers.
And that's the only reason why I'm talking to you guys. let's be serious. If it was a bad review, I wouldn't even be here. No, I appreciate that. Thank you. What can I say? It's always, even after all, I don't know, 270 something issues of comic books, literally every time somebody reads one and says something to me about it, I'm shocked. So it never gets old, you know? So I appreciate it. I'm sure you all read more than your fair share of comics.
Oh, yeah.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
And I have to wonder, like, you're following up Scott Snyder. That's like following, like the Beatles. He's one of the greats, right? Or like maybe he's more of a Nirvana or Rage Against the Machine. That's got to be intimidating as hell to go in and pick up the pieces that he left behind.
I mean, guys, you're talking to the writer who followed Geoff Johns on Green Lantern here. You know what I'm saying? Like, if it's not a suicide run, I don't do it. No. Yes, of course. You know, Scott's one of the biggest names in the industry. Obviously, very talented. A good guy on top of it. And his run was so large and so grand and so sweeping in terms of all the elements of the DCU that he was able to bring into it. You know, Earthbound and Cosmic and, you know, multidimensional and, you know, multiversal and all these kinds of things. And so, you know, it is a very groundbreaking run. But I really don't think about things in those terms, you know. I just come in and tell the stories that I would want to tell and that I would want to read and, you know, let the stories fall where they may, I guess. So, you know, it's fine. It's been a while. You know, I was trying to think about the other day. I don't think that I've actually picked up a run from someone else since New 52 Flash. So that would have been like, I don't know, 2014 maybe.
Like, wow.
Everything I've done since then has been a number one, and I've written all the way to the end. And actually, every single series that I've ever written, I was thinking about this the other day, every single series I've ever written, whether it was Green Lantern, Flash, X-Men of War, my stuff at Valiant, you know, all the way up through Freedom Fighters, which just ended in January. I wrote all the way to the end. I've never handed a series off to anybody else either. So it's kind of interesting. And it was when I sat down to work on those first issues, it was a little bit of, you know, trying to get my bearings and starting on a project in a way that's very different from how I normally do, which is a number one. But it's Justice League. So if there's something that you want to come in the middle of, that's the book. You know what I mean? So very happy to do it.
Well, you're coming into the middle of it, but it's also how old? 50, 60 years? I don't know how long the Justice League's been going. You obviously can't read everything that's out there or keep track of every character. There's just too many stories out there. How do you even kind of pitch a story? Does DC come to you with like kind of a path? Like, this is where we're leading to? Can you create a story that bridges the gap? Or do you?
Well, they said that, you know, when DC asked me if I wanted to come write some Justice League stories, you know, they said they wanted to do stories that had a smaller cast and were more, you know, 2, 3, 4 issues in length and lots of clean entry points and, you know, sort of more scaled down in terms of the number of moving pieces to them. You know, Scott's run was very much, I mean, he wrote 39 issues, but he also did an annual, and then you have No Justice before that. So I don't know. I'm going to call it 45, 50 issues of, you know, a bunch of smaller arcs embedded within a much larger story. You know, that's not what we're trying to do here. We're trying to do individual stories stand alone. Anybody can pick them up and read them. And you're right. I'm not going to be able to research the entire history of the Justice League or of all these characters, but I've also written these characters before. To some extent, you know, I've written John Stewart pretty lengthily and Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps. I wrote Barry Allen for a while. I'm working on Superman and the Superman Giant series. So I'd already done my research there. And so, you know, Batman and Wonder Woman and, you know, we've got Madame Xanadu who comes in the first issue and, you know, we'll sort of have new characters come in depending on the story and things like that. You know, I'm not always overly familiar with those characters, but I think I know enough about them and certainly about what their status quo is right now because I've been reading, you know, everything that those characters have been doing for the past, I don't know, 7 years, whatever, all the way back to the beginning of the New 52. So I do have some familiarity with them and I know where they're at right now. And that's enough for me to be able to get, you know, the character dynamics out of them that I need in order to tell the kind of stories that I want to tell. Because you're never going to read... I'd literally have to go read every single DC comic book ever, pretty much, right? I mean, every Flash, every Green Lantern, every Batman, every Superman, every Wonder Woman, and every Justice League. It's not feasible, you know? So
putting in someone like Xanadu or even the Eradicator, what kind of approval process is there? Do you just say, these are the guys I want or and the gals I want? Or is it, are they kind of handing you those pieces like these characters are available?
No, it was me coming up with an idea and asking them what characters would be usable and if I could have Eradicator and Madame Xanadu and Sodom Yacht and those things. And really my kind of idea is to come up with threats to justify the need for this team of this, you know, number of heavy hitters to get involved, you know, as opposed to something that Superman could defeat by himself or what have you. And so... you know, I'd like to take each arc and focus on the mythologies of a couple of the core characters and combine them into something larger than what it was previously, you know? So in this first storyline, you've got the Eradicator, which is an element from from Superman mythology. And then I'm combining that with Sodom Yacht and the Daxamites, which is an element of mythology that's sort of more associated recently with Green Lantern mythos and, you know, some of the things Pete Tomasi did during his run on Green Lantern Corps and, you know, Sodom Yacht, you know, Geoff Johns era and all those kinds of things and combine those two elements into something that's larger than anything that Green Lantern or Superman could defeat by themselves. And so now they need the entire Justice League. And the next story, we'll do it again, where we have elements of Wonder Woman's mythology that will connect with elements of, you know, the Spectre and Aquaman and combine it into something that's larger than any of these characters could deal with on their own. And now it requires the entire Justice League. And by doing that, it allows you, you know, not only to come up with these big threats that are, you know, somewhat familiar but spun in new ways, but also it allows you to focus on, you know, one or two characters as the quote unquote leads of each separate story, and you can kind of rotate through and have different, you know, leads as you go throughout the stories.
And we don't want to spoil the issue for people, obviously. This is Justice League 40. You end it on a pretty crazy note with a huge threat kind of poised there. How many issues are we looking at for this series? It seems like this is going to be kind of a big epic brawl that's coming.
This first story will be four issues. Okay. You know, we're going to have a four-issue story, and then we'll start the next one, which will be I think this has already been solicited, so I can probably talk about this, but the next storyline is going to feature the Spectre and elements from Wonder Woman's past. And again, we also have some elements from Aquaman that we bring into the series, and so he'll be joining the team, and that'll be a different story. So, like I say, we're trying to keep them shorter stories, and with a double shift book, you know, they come out twice a month, so really every, you know, this first story, 2 months later, you'll have another story again, so it's kind of a new entry point where you can come in. And through all of that, we're also trying to reflect events that are happening elsewhere in the DCU, you know, whether it be Clark Kent, you know, the reveal of his identity, or Alfred having recently, you know, been killed in the Batman series, and Batman now dealing with a world where he doesn't have sort of that one, you know, rock solid counsel that he could always turn to. And, you know, we have a moment in this issue where he's on his way to London and he's in the Batplane, and, you know, he remembers how he used to talk to Alfred on missions and how Alfred was always there, but Alfred's not there anymore. So instead of Alfred, you know, piloting the Batplane back to the cave, Batman just puts it on autopilot because Alfred's gone now, you know? So try to tap into some of the emotions of some of the things that are happening. Likewise with Superman, he's just given away his identity, and, you know, he is an alien from Krypton, but he's also a kid who grew up in Kansas, and, you know, maybe he wants people to think of him more as the kid from Kansas, you know, and I'm Clark Kent, you know, I don't have to just be Superman. But now here comes the Eradicator and the Daxamites and all these things that are alien and tied to Superman's past to just remind everybody how much of an alien this guy is, you know? And so you kind of get some of the emotions of those beats reflecting what's happening in the main series, sort of unifying the way all these elements are working together across the DCU.
And there's rumblings about a Generation 5 coming to DC. You know, you brought up New 52, which was kind of considered 4. Is that something you've been discussing with DC? Or is this still super top secret stuff?
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to go near that one. yeah, I think we'll just leave that to the rumor mill, I guess. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah.
It's about time. I'll say that much. It'd be nice to... I love jumping on points. That's the whole focus of our show. And there's a lot of big, heavy things happening in D.C. right now that seem like they're kind of building to something. So it'd be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, you know, for me, like, speaking about jumping on points, I don't know how much you know about my background, but I didn't start reading comic books until I was in my mid to late 20s. And so, you know, here I am in the early 2000s walking into a comic book shop and trying to find something to read. And it's all these high numbers, and, you know, you have no idea what's going on or what these mythologies are, and it's very daunting, you know. So for me, everything that I've always done, from X-Men of War all the way up to Hawkman right now, is I've always tried to write every issue you could pick it up, and you can understand everything you need to know about this character and what's happening within the story and go forward. But if you read the previous issue, there's still a lot of stuff that's going to be new and surprise you and feel like the story is moving forward. So I'm a big believer in entry points and making every single issue almost an entry point, and definitely making every story arc an entry point. Sometimes that's very easy. Sometimes it's very hard. You know, Hawkman was difficult because he has this massively confusing mythology that was a barrier to entry for pretty much everyone. And so it wasn't even just about having an entry point, it was having an entry point that would make sense and unify all this mythology into something that people could easily digest. And so now Hawkman has gone from having to explain him through, you know, various deaths and rebirths and, you know, Thanagarian and human, and, you know, they're two separate guys, but they became a hawk god or whatever, you know, you're trying to explain all these things. Now it's just become, he's a character who reincarnates across time and space. It's very easy to understand. I mean, like, we all know what that means, right?
So, sure.
So now you just pick up the series and you move from there. So, you know, that's kind of a big focus of what I try to do. And cool. Certainly trying to do it with Justice League as well.
Yeah, that's very cool. And I can totally relate to you, you know, jumping into comics kind of late 20s. I've never had a huge background or interest in comics when I was younger, but It's definitely clicking nowadays for me. And going through Justice League 40, you know, I noticed each hero was given like an equal amount of spotlight. How did you go about planning the story for that? And how did you go about writing it in a way to where each of these characters are introduced and shown off within, what, a 25 to 30 page book?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I think it's maybe just kind of how my mind works, you know. I tend to be a very organized thinker, you know, which can be a detriment sometimes, right? Because, you know, I don't have that stream of consciousness style of writing. It can feel very spontaneous and organic and works really well when you read it on the page. You kind of get swept up in it, you know. I'm very much, you know, sit down and plot everything out and write it down longhand and, you know, figure out all the moving pieces and things. And so I've done team books in the past. Most recently, you know, I did Freedom Fighters, but Hal Jordan and Green Lantern Corps, which I did for 51 issues, had basically four lead characters plus, you know, I don't know, 10,000 Green Lantern supporting characters, you know? So 7,000, I guess. But, you know, so it's just kind of the nature of the job, and you go into it knowing that you want to make sure that everybody, you can't always give everybody all the real estate that you want them to have because it's only a 20-page comic. But when somebody is on the page, you want to make sure you give them a beat or two that's memorable and that kind of explains everything you need to know about them, you know, very quickly. And you know, like I say, each story will have different, you know, quote unquote leads in the sense that their mythologies will be more driving what the thread is. And so they'll necessarily be pushed more to the forefront, but you want to make sure that everybody else is getting some time too and doesn't just sort of end up being supporting characters and pushed to the background.
You definitely executed that very well. Like,
thank you. I appreciate
it. It was just
that.
Awesome.
Thank you.
So what would be your kind of dream gig over there at DC? Is there one hero you'd love to take on a solo book, or do you like doing this kind of team stuff right now?
Yes, there is, you know, there are definitely heroes that are on my sort of wish list that I would like to do and do solo series for. Chief among them would be Superman. You know, as someone who didn't grow up reading comics, the Superman films, specifically Superman 2, was very much a touchstone of my youth, you know? And so, I don't know, I'm much more of a Superman guy than the Batman guy. Like, I think I see the world as Superman would, more so than as Batman would. So Superman is at the top of that list. And right now, I'm actually working on the Superman Giant series for DC, which
are cool.
Books that kind of go into Walmart, but they also go into the comic shops. And, you know, talking about new entry points, each story is 24 pages, completely self-contained, beginning, middle, end, and then the next issue you get another one. So every single story, you know, I really tried to think about the series as an animated cartoon, and every month you come pick it up and you get a new cartoon, and you put it down, and the next month you get another one, you know. And so it's been a great lot of fun to be able to work on that character and to do that series, which is also kind of over in its own continuity, and you can kind of do all kinds of fun stuff. And you know, the first issue he fights Parasite, and in issue 3 he fights the original Toy Man, and you know, with all the, you know, the deadly toys and a giant, you know, tin toy walking robot stomping on Metropolis and all this stuff. And it's just great stuff, you know, that you have fun doing. And if you're somebody who's my age and you know who Superman is from when you were a kid, then you see all the elements there that made you like the character to begin with, you know, the supporting cast and, you know, Clark Kent versus Superman, and he's a reporter, but he's a hero. But if you've never read a comic book in your life and you don't know anything about Superman, you can pick it up and understand everything that you need to know. So that's been a lot of fun. But I also like when DC just calls me up and says, hey, what do you think about Hawkman? And I'm like, dude, I have never, couldn't tell you the first thing about him. He's got wings, but I'll go do some research and let you know what I think, you know, and then you end up doing that and you end up coming up with ideas to do that. So that's always fun too. I always say that you can't fake stupid, you know? So
right.
Like when they call me up and they ask me about a character and I've never heard of that character, sometimes that could be a detriment, but sometimes it means that my perspective will be different because I haven't been reading Hawkman ever since I was a kid.
Right,
I don't already have Carter Hall and Katar Hole completely divorced as two separate things in my brain. So that when I sit down and read it, I say, oh, I get it. He reincarnates across time and space. They're both the same guy. And then when it turns out not being that, you go, well, I guess that's the story I'm going to do then, because that makes perfect sense, you know? So, you know, it kind of, you couldn't unlearn it if I'd already had all this continuity up in my head, you know? So it's
right. I guess it kind of works. It works both ways, right? Like either you can have a super fan write something and really get into the weeds of it, and go through the history, or you could bring in a fresh perspective and give it a new life that way.
Sure. Yeah.
And that's something you see every week in comics, right? Depending on who the writer is, what the book is. And I kind of like that there's a lot of turnover with people moving on to different books. I know some people want like the Ultimate Spider-Man run with Bendis on it for 125 issues, but
sure,
at the same time, it's nice to see writers bounce around to these different stories.
Yeah, you know, I start a project. I hope it goes 12. I really hope it goes 24. Like, that's really the goal, right? 24 issues, 2 years. And then after that, everything is gravy. You know what I mean? So I've had a couple of 50-issue runs.
Oh, wow.
X-Men of War was 56.
Oh, Green Lantern. Yeah, Green Lantern, right?
Yeah, and then Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps, 51. But then if you add in Green Lantern, it ended up being like 85, I think. So, you know, I've had some long runs, but then I've also done 5-issue miniseries, you know, 12-issue maxi-series. Yeah, I didn't know if Hawkman would make it past 12, and I just turned in the script for 24. So, wow. You know, you never know what's going to happen with any of this stuff. But yeah. So,
when you started, was your first book The Surrogates?
It was, yes.
Yeah. So you must have been like, this is easy. Like,
it all gets downhill from there, baby. You know what
it gets
mean?
Picked like, up and turned into a feature film with Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
That's your first story.
Nowhere to go but down. You know what I mean? No, I mean, I never did think that. I still don't think that. And I was just shocked by anybody, by all the stuff that ended up happening with Surrogates. I thought I had a decent story. And the most that I hoped I would get out of it was that it would be a resume piece I could show to other editors and say, this is who I am as a writer. This is how I develop character. This is what I do with themes and you know, subplots and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And use it to get other jobs. I never anticipated it would end up being made into a film or any of those kinds of things. And even in the wake of that, I don't try to repeat that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not trying to write Hollywood pitch packages or anything. I just sit down and I write the stories that I write. And if somebody else wants to take it and turn it into something else, you know, they're more than welcome to do it. You know, the first storyline that we did in Flash, where Future Flash comes back to try to erase Barry Allen from the timeline. They end up taking big elements of that and using it in season 3 of the Flash television show, you know. That's all great, but that's not why I'm doing any of it. I'm just trying to write stories and have people enjoy them. And if the other stuff comes along, that's great.
Well, Robert, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. And best of luck with the rest of the books and to your continued success with what you've been doing. You've been killing it at DC so far. We've really enjoyed what you've done and can't wait to read what's next.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
All right. That's the end of our episode. If you fantastic, amazing listeners want to keep up with us throughout the week and see what we're up to, you can follow us on Twitter at The Comic Book Pod and on Instagram and Facebook as well as at The Spectacular Comic Book Podcast. If you've got any questions, if you have any suggestions or anything, feel free to email us at thecomicbookpod@gmail.com. And the special thing with Anchor is you can send us voice messages. So if you have a question for us and you want to hear yourself on the podcast, feel free to head over to our Anchor channel and hit that send voice message button and let's hear from you. Other than that, we appreciate you listening and we hope you all have a fantastic day.
We'll see you next time.